Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Bees in South Texas face a rugged existence. They must deal with pesticides, habitat loss, and the challenges of climate change. Each of these is a significant threat to these vital pollinators. So bees, they need more friends. And we also need bees. Bees contribute immensely to agricultural productivity, ensuring the abundance of fruits and vegetables for us to consume. And to help educate the public about bees, the Talking Bees Roadshow is hitting the road and supported by the Healthy Hive Foundation, and it could be going to a San Antonio Public Library near you. Help with a grant from the HEB's Our Texas, Our Future program, the Healthy Hive Foundation is bringing a free, family-friendly presentation to public libraries all across Texas, but, you know, here in San Antonio, too. So you can call in if you got questions and comments about bees, honey, beekeeping, any bee-related questions. We got your answers. Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. And we're joined this afternoon by Conrad Bouffard. He is the founder and head beekeeper with Round Rock Honey. He's been a beekeeper for over 20 years. And Conrad, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Michaela Ulmer. She is the CEO of Me and the Bees Lemonade and with the Healthy Hive Foundation. And Michaela, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon.
All right, so I need to get them on different mics. Okay, Michaela, can you go onto a different mic, that one over there? And then Conrad, if you can move on to that mic there. All right, sorry about the on-air choreography here, but that's the way it is in live radio at times. And again, the number to call in, if you got a question or comment about bees, 833-877-8255. And so Conrad, let me ask you about how are bees doing these days?
So they're doing better than 5 or even 10 years ago. Over the past 20 years, I've been professional beekeeper for 21 years. And during that time, things started out pretty bad, but they become...
So we were talking about like a hive crisis, a collapse they were talking about?
Yes. About 2007, 2008, there was a basically a worldwide phenomenon called colony collapse disorder that hit the American system pretty harder than most other systems because we essentially have a mechanized food system here. And the way that bees are moved around the country, the quantity of bees at one time being moved from place to place, the monocropping, drought, other environmental conditions that are detrimental to bees, all of that came together in a way that caused massive numbers of colony die-off, or large-scale colony die-off. In some cases, half the bees that were out, sometimes even more than half the bees. In some areas, it was as much as 70 to 80% of the colonies that were professionally managed were collapsing. Today, we are, I can only speak from my management of my hives. We don't have anywhere near the losses that we used to have. We also are working with queens, queen bees, and genetics that are more reliable. So for the past 2 years, we have had, in some parts of our business, we've had zero losses. But in the worst case scenarios, we've had, they've never gone higher than 10%. So that's a lot better than 50% losses that we used to have, say back in, you know, when we first began.
And so, Michaela, do we know what exactly was, I mean, those things that you mentioned, the drought, monoculture, mechanized agriculture, those are still things today. So, Michaela, I mean, what changed that now we're seeing the recovery? You mentioned improved genetics. That sounds like a lot of work. And then getting those genetics out to all across the country so that we can have improved hives. So what are we, you know, what can you add to that, Michaela? Explain to me how things are going now. Hang on 1 second, the mic. All right, so we're going to have to crowd onto one mic. I'm sorry about this, folks. All right, so this is, we're just going to have to like share the mic, like, you know, like Stephen Van Zandt and Bruce Springsteen. So let's do that.
Okay, all so right. Is this good?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're just responding a lot more aggressively to bee losses. They're splitting hives more often. They're replacing queens more often. They're churning out bee colonies faster than they can die off. And because of that, we're seeing a lot less of a decline. But there's kind of two different sources. So the agricultural census is saying that bees are at an all-time high. There's about 3.8 million hives nationwide. And then you have the honey count, which is saying that there's much less bees than expected. And they're still fighting off up to 50% of losses annually, for example, in 2023. So I would say that nationally, we're seeing that there still be lost. It's still a challenge, but rather than the focus or the problem just being pesticide use and mites, there's the added climate change that's really making it hard for bees to have consistent seasonal pollination and food sources.
All right, so let me go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you got a question or a comment, call in. Let's go to Michael on the phones. And Michael, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, got a question more about, or maybe more about a concern around yellow jackets, and I'm allergic to them. So, and I'm probably allergic to the bees too. But so I got to do what I need to do to make sure I'm safe. But what can one do to attract more bees? Because I'm in the process of getting my fall garden planted, and I'm probably a little bit late. But what can I do to attract more bees to my garden or my backyard?
All right, who wants to take that? Do you want to, Michaela?
I'll take it from a wild and native bee perspective, and maybe you can take it from honeybees. But wild and native bees, in some cases, they're 2 to 3 times more efficient pollinators than honeybees. They have a very wide range of foods that they pollinate for. Honeybees are more generalized pollinators. They're going to pollinate anything. And wild bees have co-evolved with certain plant species. And so here, native in Texas, some things that you can do are increasing the amount of pollinator gardens that you have, or just spaces for bees to forage. And so that can be high amounts of native perennials that bloom at diverse times throughout the year, so they have a constant food source. That can also be increasing the amount of land for ground bees to create habitats on. So it's about 70% of bee species are ground bees, and so they need kind of sunny, dry, exposed land to build their nests in. And then you can also do things like having water sources, having very diverse, like biodiverse, plains. Yeah, wildflower gardens and just areas like that, so that there's constant food sources for the bees and water and places for them to build their nests. But in terms of increasing honeybees in your area.
All right, so what we got to do here, we got to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about, you know, honeybees and the domesticated bees that can be used to improve pollination in your garden. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about bees, all types of bees, honey bees, native bees. They don't make honey, but they're very important to our ecosystem, and they kind of get neglected in the conversation. We're going to talk more about native bees, but first, let's keep answering the question that we had from Michael before about if honeybees, having a hive, can improve, or what can you do to bring honeybees to your garden to improve pollination. And so, Conrad, if you could tell us more about that.
Sure. So the number one thing that I would do is if I knew nothing about bees and were sorting through all the advice given, the best advice I would give would be to commit to cutting your lawn half as much as you currently do if you have a lawn. And that's to preserve soil moisture, which allows more and a greater variety of plants that bear nectar for honeybees to grow. So that's the first thing. Whenever I go out and, say, remove bees from a place where they're not wanted, like if they're in someone's soffit or something like that, they're almost always in yards, people's lawns that are more lush, more rich, sometimes a little bit unkempt. And that's okay, because that shows you that the bees prefer an area where there's a better soil moisture and a greater variety of plants. So that's the first thing you can do, is cut down on, like if you're mowing your lawn every, say, 8 to 10 days, then mow it, say, every 2 weeks to 3 weeks. That's the first thing. The second thing is plant native plants. And that is particularly important. And the best way to do that is to get interested in, say, a Texas Master Gardener program. They're all over the place. In fact, at many of the Talking Bees Roadshow events, the Texas Master Gardeners will also set up booths at the libraries. And they're very useful for being a resource not only of good advice, but also free plants and or low-cost plants and plant sharing. Many libraries are implementing seed libraries in their collections. So it's not just books anymore. The library of the past is not the same as the library of today. So the library of today is really a community resource. And among those are seed libraries. One of those, the better, more exciting resources from my perspective, is a seed library. So go there.
Well, tell me, what is a seed library?
A seed library is where you have seeds from various native...
You can't check out a seed and then grow the plant and bring the seed.
You take a seed and then you grow the seed. And then when the seed produces a plant and the plant produces more seed, you return seed. And so that's how some of them work. Others of them work and you check out a seed, or you take a seed, and then a local master gardener will come in. It'll be their job to come in and replace those seeds as they go out. One of the most popular resources in libraries today are those seed libraries, and it gives a lot of extra purpose to a lot of people that are really interested in plants. They see it as, a system of cultivation that spreads flowers, native plants, and flowers into more places. The other great thing about native plants is that if you have, say, some type of plant that could be found all over the country, and then you have a native plant right next to it, the bees will, you'll see by not only the concentration of bees, but also butterflies, moths, ants, other types of pollinators coming to that plant versus the other ones. They prefer them much more. Also by season, there are certain types of plants that you can plant that will be more beneficial for honeybees than others. One of them in the winter is rosemary. And that's kind of like, rosemary is like a super vitamin for honeybees.
So let's talk more about this presentation that's going to be happening at public libraries across San Antonio and across Central Texas, and the Talking Bees Roadshow. And Michaela Ulmer, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I'm realizing, or not realized, but the Healthy Hive helps save bees through research, education, and protection. And one of the most important parts is education, because my story with the bees started when I was 4.5 years old. I was stung by 2 bees in 1 week. I was stung in my ear, stung on my neck, absolutely terrified of the bees and wanted nothing to have to do with them. And that was around 2009, when colony collapse disorder was a very big issue. And so going to my public library, I checked out some books about the bees. I learned that bees are incredibly important pollinators, that our food supply relies on bee pollination, and then also that they're dying at an alarming rate. And as a four-year-old, four-and-a-half-year-old kindergartner, I decided I wanted to help save them, and I started a lemonade stand. And I dressed up in a bee suit, and I donated a portion of proceeds from that stand to help save the bees. And one of our first business partners was Mr. Conrad, because honey's pretty expensive as an ingredient for a stand. And so he said, if you can market our honey through word of mouth, we can, you know, donate some lemonade. And for the first stands, that's what we did. But since Me and the Bees has scaled to a national company with approaching 10 million bottles sold, and to increase our impact on the bee populations, we started a nonprofit called the Healthy Hive Foundation. So the Talking Bees Roadshow is all about kind of going back and teaching this new generation of potential bee conservationists all about the bees. Mr. Conrad is going from city to city in Austin at public libraries and providing free bee information and bee lessons to families, to gardeners, to environmentalists, to anyone who wants to learn more. And so it's, I guess, repeating the story and giving back, because when you find out that bees are more than just little fuzzy insects that can hurt you, you can be a big player in terms of our food supply and in protecting bee pollination.
Where were you when you got stung?
I was actually outside. So we have a butterfly garden in our backyard, and I was helping my parents with the butterfly garden. And the second time I was at, I think, Salt Lake Barbecue or something. I was at an outdoor event, and that's when I got stung in my ear. And so with both of those things in 1 week, I genuinely thought that I was going to be stung for the rest of my life twice a week. I didn't want to go outside. And so seeing the other side of what bees are and how these little fuzzy flying teddy bears can make such a huge impact on the food that I eat every day, that's what made the difference. So the whole goal of the Talking Bees Roadshow is, how can we show kids that around 100 of the crops that we eat are pollinated by the bees? And how can we show them that without bees, we can't have not only our fruits and veggies, but also things like dairy, because dairy comes from cows, and cows eat a plant called alfalfa, and alfalfa depends on pollination as well. So I think it's incredibly important what we're doing, and this one of the reasons we're here is to tell people to come out, come try some lemonade, come try some fresh honey, come learn about the bees, and potentially give back and work to help save the bees yourself with the information that you learned.
So we do have a list of locations here in San Antonio at the local libraries, August 6th, at the Collins, Geta, and McCreelis libraries. And then there's further down through the month of August, a bunch of other libraries in San Antonio that people can go and get the presentation and learn more about bees. But Conrad, as we heard Michaela tell her story, and she's talking about being stung by bees, that's what people are. They're freaked out about being stung by bees, as if it's the worst thing that could ever happen to you if you're, you know, not extra sensitive to bee stings. You know, so what should we do to first explain to people about, you know, being stung by a bee is, it's not that bad.
Right. So a lot of people, the number one thing that I hear whenever people are discussing getting stung by a bee is that they say, I'm allergic to the bee. And that becomes the front door through which they enter a house of fear. And so what we try and do is we try and educate people that, you know, if you are stung by a bee, well, the bee was simply trying to protect its home. That's number one. And the bee had to give its life to sting you. So you have to take those things into consideration, and you have to have a sense of fairness in terms of your interactions with nature. And so if you go into nature and you think it's all about me, I'm the alpha predator here, you're probably not going to get very far, and you're probably going to end up, you know, not living very harmoniously, simply because that's not really the way of the world. And so so what we try and do is we talk to people about honeybees and about stinging, but we also emphasize the upside, which is honey, and also just the joy that comes from keeping bees. Keeping bees can be very meditative. It's can be very helpful for just your mental health, if to have a small beehive in the backyard. We emphasize those things in an effort to reduce fear. And I also want to point out that whenever I started this, I was a high school teacher. Whenever I started the hunting company, we started in 2003. And the goal at the time was not necessarily it was not just to produce honey. It was to address the lack of fundamental awareness about bees. So it was about education from the get-go. And so that's why when Michaela came to me, I mean, I still have a vivid memory of her 4 years old. She's wearing a yellow dress with flowers on it. And I thought this is a kid with real spunk. You know, this is 4 years old wanting to know about bees. How many four-year-olds do you know that do that? I mean, that was fantastic. And she's done a great job. We've been out a few times when she was younger like that to the beehives. And we had a little kid's bee suit on her and got into the hive, tasted some honey. Another thing is that at these talks here in San Antonio, I purposefully pull honey from hives, from our hives, Round Rock Honey Hives, that are not very far from downtown San Antonio, for the purposes of showing what current honey from this area tastes like, and then comparing it to honeys that are taken from our hives in Round Rock and then some from up in Waco. And the difference, even though they may be the same color, the difference in taste is remarkable. And that's one big takeaway that people have from these presentations, is they're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that there was so much variety and flavor, and that, you know, one hive can have multiple different types of honey inside of it, and it could produce a completely different type of honey than a hive that's, say, 100 yards away. And whenever they understand that, they start to develop a greater curiosity, which ultimately leads to a greater appreciation for honeybees.
Michaela, can you taste the difference from these different honeys?
I can taste the difference for sure. I've been to the Round Rock Honey Hives multiple times, and I feel like each time you can see the difference. Of course, there's darker honeys and more honeys that are more rich in color, and then there's lighter ones, and it all depends on what flowers those bees produce. But one of the best parts about getting that hands-on experience with bees is that it just reduces fear. Like, the second you put on that bee suit and that beekeeping outfit, you realize, oh, okay, they can't hurt me through here. Maybe if I go out into the hives, it's okay. Or the second you try a little bit of hive straight from the honeycomb, you realize, oh, they make something pretty good. There's a positive side to the bees as well. So again, doubling down on that, the education and the awareness aspect of beekeeping and of roadshows like this are just so critical.
You mentioned bee honey from nearby San Antonio, near downtown. Okay, so how do you describe the taste of that kind of honey compared to others?
So it's different at different times of the year.
It tastes more like asphalt, or
no. Well, we don't have hives in downtown, and the reason for that is not necessarily because of the asphalt, but because of the dumpsters, and so people will throw cans of Coke and different types of soda in a dumpster, and the bees will forage off of that because of the high fructose corn syrup that's in it. So we don't do bees in densely populated urban areas precisely because of that. We want the bees to forage on natural plant cover and trees and all of that that are in more rural areas. So to get to those rural areas, there are some areas where you can travel as little as 10 to 15 miles outside of the downtown area, and you're in the middle of a ranch. And that's the case with our bees. We also have quite a number of bees in between here and Seguin, or hives, in between here and Seguin. And because of that, if we want to go further than, you know, the immediate area in and around downtown San Antonio, we don't have to go very much further to get some really high-quality samples.
We're taking a break. We can call in if you've got a question about bees, honey, whether or not it's good for your allergies. We'll talk about that. And other questions you might have about beekeeping. If you ever wanted to get into beekeeping, what are the first steps? How much money would it take to invest to become a beekeeper? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this break. Thank you. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, where I'm joined by Conrad Beaufort. He is the founder and head beekeeper at Round Rock Honey. And also with us is Michaela Ulmer. She is the CEO of Me and the Bees Lemonade. And she is also with the Healthy Hive Foundation. And she is a young beekeeper, 19 years old, and enthusiastic about bees and beekeeping. And certainly it makes it look like the future is probably a little bit brighter, knowing that someone like you is working to protect the bees. Michaela, appreciate that. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or comment about the bees, honey, beekeeping, let's go to Michael again on the phones. And Michael, you're on the air. Okay, go ahead. Yes.
The first time I was on, I called back again right now because you went to a commercial, and I had one more question, wanting to know where y'all can recommend to buy some local honey.
All right, Michael, thank you very much. I'm pretty sure Round Rock Honey would probably work, right? What else you got?
Yeah, so our honey this year in particular is more from San Antonio area than it is from the Austin area. And some years it'll be more from Austin because we have hives there and we have hives here. So, of course, we recommend ours. But really, the best honey you can ever have is the honey from your own backyard. So if you have a hive in your backyard, that's the best. If you're looking for high-quality honey, then I recommend Round Rock Honey. I mean, of course, I'm a little bit I have a clear preference because, you know, it's the honey that we make. But I also know, based on tests and based on quality control and monitoring what, you know, a lot of other honey companies are doing, I know that our standards are significantly higher than most other beekeepers at the scale that we're at. If you don't have a hive in your backyard and you don't want to go to the grocery store to buy Round Rock honey, then perhaps go to a beekeeper or a beekeeping club in your area and make friends with a local beekeeper, maybe volunteer to do some work with them, and they might trade you labor for honey.
Michaela, any thoughts about where to source good local honey?
I think he answered it great. And I wanted to say, I'm not a competitor. I'm more of a bee ambassador than a beekeeper myself. But I think that's the perfect question, because one of the best ways you can save the bees is by finding raw local honey, because those local beekeepers are taking the best care of their bees. They know what those bees are pollinating and eating, and so they know what's in their honey. So great question, and I'm glad Mr. Conrad could answer that.
So I do want to ask about, there are some concerns about buying off-the-shelf commercialized honey. So when you buy commercial, big, you know, corporate honey, frequently that's been pasteurized. Is that and so I'm going to ask you about what does that mean. But also, there have been instances of honey that has been imported from China that has not been pure honey, but has been adulterated with high fructose corn syrup. And so you're not really getting what you're paying for. You're getting something completely different, something actually you may not want. So can you talk about that, Conrad?
Yeah, so the situation today is better than it was when we started. I will say that. And that was primarily because of an article that was in Food Safety News up out of Seattle that took several brands of honey off the shelves in different parts of the country and tested them and found that the majority of them were not actually honey. And the number one thing that made them not honey was that there was no pollen in it. So one thing you have to understand about large-scale honey production, like we're talking honeys that can be found as easily in New York State as they can in Texas or any other state in the union, is that a lot of them take the pollen out. And the reason they do that is they heavily filter it, and in some cases they flash boil it or treat it in other ways so that it remains uncrystallized on the shelf, because Americans as a rule prefer liquid honey to crystallized honey. Well, my perspective, when we started, I remember selling our honey direct to consumers at the Austin Farmers Market when they first opened. And I our perspective was, it's not what we do to the honey, it's what we don't do. We don't do anything. We just take it out of the hive, put it in the bottle. And in fact, when we first started, our honey was called crunchy honey because there were bee legs, bee wings, all of that sort of stuff in it.
Extra protein.
Extra protein, that's right, that's right. And that really went over well. And that's why we kind of rocketed in popularity among people that valued quality. And so there was that. The as far as the other issue,
well, is pasteurization of honey. That's just done to make the honey so it doesn't crystallize on the shelf. It's not really done to it's not like we pasteurize milk so that it, you know, it's for healthy purposes. That's not necessary for honey.
Well, honey, if it is raw honey, it will self-preserve. It's the only food in nature that doesn't spoil. And so it's actually considered a whole food or a sacred food because it never spoils. It never never goes bad. And so if honey is left that way, it will never go bad. But the problem is that things are done to honey for commercial reasons that are not good. And I will say that nationwide article that came out in Food Safety News was so well supported by Dr. Von Bryant. He's now passed away, but Dr. Von Bryant at Texas A&M University, and he was the one that made it possible by testing these honeys. He was the one that did the testing, and he's also the one that, when he was alive, did the testing for Round Rock honey. And the gentleman that wrote that article, he actually was prompted to write the article by me because I met him at a trade show in California called the Fancy Food Show. And he said, hey, I'm looking to do an expose on honey because I know that there are some issues with it. And I said, well, what you should do is take some honey off the shelf. Just go to any old grocery store, send them in for testing and see what happens. He said, you're going to find that most of them are not real. And that was the context within which Round Rock honey grew up. Today, there are more options, and the bar has been raised in terms of quality, not only here in Texas, but across the country as a whole.
I think the biggest red flag was the discrepancy between bees that actually existed and the amount of honey that was being sold on shelves. Yeah. Like there's definitely something wrong if there's a big difference between those two numbers.
All right, let's go to Patty on the phones, 833-877-8255. And Patty, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon. I wanted to say I'm in Government Hill in San Antonio, and I've been letting wildflowers grow all around the perimeter of the yard. I believe I have identified 5 different kinds of bees that come to visit, and I'm wondering if I were to place a hive, would there be competition between them, or is there any problem with different species of bees interacting with each other?
All right, for the great question, Patty, thank you so much. So if you put in a domesticated European hive in your yard, is that going to outcompete with the local bees?
So this is one of the greatest criticisms that native pollinator persons that advocate for native pollinators, this is one of the greatest criticisms that they have whenever it comes to keeping honeybees, because honeybees technically are not native. They were brought here about 500 years ago, but they've been here so long they might as well be native. So it's not that the honeybees will do anything harmful to the native pollinators. It's that the honeybees are more efficient at pollinating, and there's only limited resources, especially in drought periods. There's only limited resources and limited amounts of pollen and nectar available that they all have to share. So if you add a beehive to the mix, then that could negatively impact the native pollinators. What I would do is, if it were me, is I would just play it by ear. I would see if there's anyone else in the neighborhood that already has bees, because if you have one beehive in a neighborhood and then you go and add another beehive, then suddenly you've increased by 100% the number of bees in that neighborhood. And that could really harm the native pollinators, because no one is putting, you know, a group of native pollinators. They're not artificially doubling the size of the native pollinators. So it's important to communicate with your neighbors to find out where, you know, other hives are. Maybe join a local beekeeping club. But if there are no other honeybees in your area, then you can put a hive there. The one thing that I see some people do is they get so excited that they'll put 10 hives in a small neighborhood, and that overwhelms the native bee population. So you don't want to do that. You want to do everything in proportion, and especially if you're in an area where there are multiple home lots in a small area.
Michaela, I've seen that there are boxes people can put up for native bees that have little tubes and stuff. I mean, does that work? What do you have to do to make sure that you're doing it right?
I think those work when they're done right. And a lot of the times, these kind of take-home honeybee boxes or honeybee homes can do more harm than
good. Are they honeybee homes?
Native bee homes or mason bee homes.
Okay.
And they can do more harm than good because the reeds are coated in some sort of preservative or plastic. Or they can grow mold so that when bees do make their nests in these tubes, when the next season comes around, there's mold and the larvae are somehow harmed. So the best things that you can do are, first, there's 3,600 native bees in the United States. 70% are ground bees, around 28% burrow in old beetle tunnels and branches and sticks and things like that. But the best thing that you can do is find those habitats naturally. So if you're going to buy the bee homes, make sure that it's natural wood, natural reeds. And then if you want to attract more of those ground bees, really clear out the ground area with no mulch and no coverage so that they can build those nests themselves.
All right. More questions and comments, give us a call, 833-877-8255. Talking about bees, becoming a friend to the bees. We need more. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about bees, beekeeping, and honey. And Michaela Ulmer is with us in the studio. She's the 19-year-old CEO of Me and the Bees Lemonade and also part of the Healthy Hive Foundation. And she's out there spreading the good word about be good to the bees. But tell me more about this corporate. You brought out these bottles of lemonade. This is from your company. It's got your picture on it. How old was that picture?
That was taken at 9.
Okay. And these are like sold everywhere or where?
So they're sold at Targets, at Whole Foods, but also HEBs here in Texas. And I think that's the perfect segue because the Talking Bee Roadshow is sponsored by HEB. But when I first started, I was selling it out of my stand twice a year. I was selling it at Bevo Boulevard in Austin, Austin Lemonade Day, the Acton Children's Business Fair as an elementary schooler. And one thing that I would do anytime someone would stop by the stand is I would tell them a couple bee facts and get them interested in them as well. And that paired with the fact that it has honey as a sweetener, and Me and the Bees donates a portion of our profits to organizations that are working hard to save the bees, meant it completely blew up. And so now it's a national company. We pitched on Shark Tank back in 2016 and landed a deal and have done up.
Who'd you do a deal with?
Dave and John. Dave and John was our investor and is our partner now. And then.
Have they been cool?
They've been very cool. Very cool. Love the bees. Actually, Bomba Socks is one of his most recent investors and investments, and their logo is a bee as well. So I think he's definitely a bee fan. But this is one of the main reasons I preach about social entrepreneurship, which is coming up with a business idea that does good in the world, because it's possible to not only be a teenager and be a CEO, but the company that you're running, it's possible to do good and for it to taste good at the same time. And so Me and the Bees, we're working hard to save the bees. We're making lemonade that tastes good and does good, and spreading the word.
So you gave me a black cherry flavored one. It tastes delicious. It's really good. And you have the classic flavored lemonade, and there's a prickly pear one, and you said it's pollinated by bats.
Yeah, so the cactus plant is pollinated by bats. We've had ginger flavors, but the current flavor lineup is passion fruit and very berry, which are the newest ones from this summer, and they're starting exclusively in HEB. There's classic for those people who just love a simple lemonade. You had the black cherry, and we're always...
Where do you see this going? What are you going to do with all this?
Ooh, I think right now we are... I'm looking at what's the next product line and how can we get the product into more hands. So it's in about 6,500 stores across all 50 states in the United States. And we have a team, or I like to call us a hive of around seven people. And we have a chief marketing bee and chief operations bee. But
you're the queen bee.
I'm queen bee, I guess. But if you know a hive, you know that the queen bee doesn't actually run the hive. But I guess I'm the queen bee. And I think that the way that I see this is continuing to find strategic partners to make an impact on the bees, continuing to grow the distribution and to get more people aware of me and the bees and to enjoy it as a product.
All right, I'm going to play a voicemail with a question and we get an answer. Go ahead.
This is Michael. What is the difference between a hive of wild bees that set up a hive in a vacant pot in your backyard and a hive of honeybees in a commercial beekeeper's business? Do they both make honey? Are the bees genetically the same? Thank you very much.
All right. So, Conrad?
Well, the key difference is that the swarm that comes into the pot in your backyard, you don't know the genetics of it. If you're a commercial beekeeper, you probably or you should know the genetics of your hives because you've been replacing the queens and you've been working hard to breed queens that are mated with drones from a particular area for whatever genetic profile you want. So that's the key difference, is that whenever a swarm comes in and takes over, whether it be a composter or a pot or a barbecue pit or whatever it is that they get into, you don't know the genetics of it.
So we don't know how Africanized they've become?
There's a possibility that they could be hybridized or Africanized bees. That's one of the main fears, especially in this part of the country.
So they could be more aggressive, you know, and more protective.
Yeah, we don't say aggressive, though. We say defensive, because to be aggressive, they would have to come for you sometimes for no good reason, and bees always have a reason. They're defending their hive.
Well, I mean, I frequently see news stories about someone mowing their grass, the vibrations from the lawnmower, and we do need to raise awareness of how some people, you know, that they have a fatal encounter with the hive.
Yes, that's true. In some cases, like most of the time, whenever I hear of someone getting stung by bees, there's two things at play. One is that they've run over a beehive that was usually in the ground, or in a wood pile next to where they were mowing, or they were weed eating, or something like that. And then the second thing is that the people where it becomes fatal, in most cases, they have complicating health problems that are so aggravated by the bee stings that they unfortunately pass away. And so that is definitely something that, you know, people should.
So did we just get a lot of bad information about? For a long time we were told about the Africanized bees are coming and it's going to be really bad and. Was it fear mongering?
Well, I don't know if it was fear mongering because there were Africanized bees as a hybrid started in 1953 in Brazil, and they spread up through Mexico. And then when they got to the United States, the reason why they became such a widespread problem is because of our mechanized food system and the way that we distribute everything, whether it be fruit or vegetables or even bees themselves, the way we put them on trucks and we ship them all over the country. And then in the wintertime, many beekeepers from the northern part of the country come down here to keep their bees, spreading them from the valley all the way out to Houston. And then come spring, they go back out and spread them around. So whenever the Africanized bees came in and crossbred with the Italian honeybees or the European honeybees, that spread the genetics.
Right. So they became milder, but there's still different elements. And we don't know if it's a wild beehive that establishes itself. You don't know where it is on the scale. Let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air.
Hey, quick question. And I know the answer to this, but I think it's a worthy topic to end on. What if you find bees living in a part of your house or your barn or your shed? How do you deal with that? And I guess more importantly, what do you not do? Thanks.
All right, Randall. So, Conrad, what do you do if you have bees that have taken up residence in your house?
Well, there, believe it or not, there are a lot of people that don't mind the bees being in their house, but most of them don't want bees in their house because bees can cause structural issues. Honey can break out of the cells, run down the walls. I've seen some cases, like there was an old church in Austin where there was about 800 pounds of honey in a single wall. And so that is a problem. The way that, and I can't speak for them, but I know that the Texas Apiary Inspection Service, when this discussion has come up in the past and we've asked them, you know, what do we do or what should our standard be for how to approach a situation for bees in a person's home? And the response and the stance taken is that the safety of the people comes first, obviously. But the method to deal with it is usually to call to look up a professional bee remover.
Well, there are bee sanctuaries.
Yes.
That will come and get it for you. Don't call an exterminator.
No, absolutely don't call an exterminator. Now, having said that, there are a lot of exterminator companies or extermination companies that will refer you to people that do live removals and then take the bees out and put them in their yard. In fact, early on, I did hundreds and hundreds of bee removals myself, and that's how we built up our bee population. And there are still people that do that. And to look up one that is in your area, if you have a bee problem in your walls, call the Texas Apiary Inspection Service or go on their website, and they have a county-by-county list of persons that do bee removal. One word of caution, not everyone that claims to be a bee removal specialist has the best interest of the homeowner in mind, so you need to vet these people. You need to ask them, do they have insurance? What is their experience? Do they have any recommendations? Just like you would do with any other person that is coming to work on your home.
So let's recap this, Talking Bee Tour, Talking Bees Roadshow that is going to be happening around San Antonio, supported by the Healthy Hive Foundation with a grant from HEB's Our Texas, Our Future program. So, Michaela, what's the run of show? What am I going to see if I go to, say, the Geta Library on August 6th at 4:30 p.m.?
Well, you're going to first be greeted by Mr. Conrad, and you're going to probably sample a little bit of Me and the Bees lemonade. You're going to sit down, have a nice session that talks all about the bees and different various levels of difficulty or complexity for all ages. Generally, I believe you taste test some honey and show the difference between the shade of honey from clovers and honeys from wildflowers.
Do you have a portable hive that people
We don't take, we have in the past taken live hives into presentations, but generally speaking, bringing them from south of San Antonio or from Austin to here, especially this time of year when it's hot, that's not good for the bees. So, and plus it can scare people.
Should people leave water out for bees and things? What can you do, really? What's the easiest thing I can do to help the bees in my neighborhood?
Well, if you have a bird bath or something like that, put a few sticks in it so that the bees have something to land on, and just keep a bird bath full of water.
Don't use pesticides.
Oh, yeah, don't use pesticides. And are the pesticides getting better? I knew that they were really hard on the bees. Did we fix that?
Well, so, you know, the class of pesticides that has been found to be most dangerous to bees is not one that actually kills them. It simply disables them, and that's the neonicotinoid class of pesticides. And so,
there's still some work to do.
Yeah, there's still some work to do.
All right. Conrad Bouffard he's the founder and head beekeeper, 20 years of experience at Round Rock Honey. Look for it wherever you buy good honey. Also, Michaela Ulmer is the CEO of Me and the Bees Lemonade, and also she is the founder of the Healthy Bees Foundation. Wow, it was so good to talk to you guys today. It was really good. I'm really glad to know that y'all two are out there helping with the bees. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.